Are we live? Or I don't see the show starting. I just see the show starting. Are we sure we're live?
I think we're live.
Okay.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome in, Lee. Welcome in, everyone. RFK Refugees Podcast. Ted here. John here. Sorry, John's little. Producer Brian's little window kind of threw me off there for a second. Hope you all are doing well. We're here to talk about DC United, Washington Spirit. We are always here every week. If you're new to the show, we're here every Monday. We talk all DC soccer. We answer questions. We do everything. All fun all the time.
So many questions too. So I think 80% of the show will be answering your questions, which is great because, you know, say theoretically there wasn't an outline made for the show yet. Say that's possible. Who knows? Thank you for all the help.
Yeah. Yeah. And it looks like my producer Brian's like window is like catching up on me completely. It's crazy. John, how you doing, my friend? How was your weekend?
How was my weekend? Oh yeah. No, it's okay. It's pretty good. Played baseball on Sunday, got hurt again. So that's, you know, that's the weekly report out. That's what's going to be happening. What about you? Did you have a lot of running around this weekend, or did you take a weekend off from that?
I took a weekend off from the refereeing. Needed a little break. Jumped right in. Actually went to, discovered on Friday that Lynchburg FC, the pre-professional US PSL team, I think it's the league they play, maybe it's UPSL, pre-professional. They were playing the DC United U19 Academy. So I got to watch that action. DC United did not do well. They had a player sent off, pretty clear dogzo penalty, red card, not attempting to play the ball. It was interesting. It was certainly a younger DC United team. I believe Nino, the 17-year-old, and I'm trying to remember his last name. He was getting called
Aldenado.
Aldenado. He was out there as the number 10. Looked very good. Definitely looked above. Watching him out there, I'm like, man, this team really needs an MLS Next Pro team, because I think he would be perfect to kind of just slot right into that team to get some minutes. I think it's definitely it's clear what the goal of this team is. They're like trying to give, you know, the U19s, I think, don't really, you know, have, I guess, an academy league to play in. It's normally like 16, 17s, maybe 18-year-olds. So I think this is an opportunity to give some kids that are on the fringe. Also take some kids that I think they probably think are really talented and have them play up against, you know, 22, 23-year-old college kids, which it definitely the size difference was noticeable between the teams.
Right.
For sure.
And you thought you moved to Lynchburg, you wouldn't see any more DC United games.
Yeah, there you go. What do you know?
There you go. They come to you.
Exactly. For one game, that's it.
That's right. My weekly indulgence. What's my pick of the week? This week, from a music perspective, we have Fanagram. Voices came out in 2013.
Nice.
It's their best album. They have a bunch of them. It's the best one. So I suggest if maybe you're driving home, or you're doing something else tonight on this late night, that's a great album to listen to.
Yeah. Shout out to the person, and his name I forgot, but he also, I feel like I should give him a shout out if he's listening to the podcast. It was nice to meet somebody who actually recognized me at the Lynchburg game. So wanted to shout that out real quick, but, good record, John. Sorry. That completely was off the track. This show is just flying right off the rails. Let's bring it back onto the rails if we can, and usually fail. Let's talk DC United, 2-0 losers, to NYCFC. Second straight loss of the season. Mood, surprisingly, considering, like, you know, how some moods have been with teams when they lose, you know, two games in a row. I've actually got to give props. Usually I see a lot of, and maybe there still is some of that if you go into the Instagram comments or the Twitter comments, but.
Well, don't do that.
Yeah. But I feel like apart from that, which is always going to be doom and gloom after a loss, most people are kind of like, you know, this is bad, but, you know, I think the larger picture is still being seen. So maybe that's a positive take from this game. John, some of your thoughts about the game? Anything you want to talk about
biggest. So we knew going into this situation, we don't really do well in New York City away, regardless of which stupid baseball field they're playing on. That was sort of the table stakes. We knew going in that we were going to be missing our right back and our best midfielder. He would not be healthy or available for the game, or, you know, they would be suspended. We knew Ted Cucciopietro was going to be injured. So that was all sort of bad news. We didn't do the math necessarily when we thought, okay, well, what does that do to the bench? And then we got to see that. We got to see that there were three bench players and two goalkeepers. That was the bench. we're going to have a lot of questions about that. I think people were basically saying, how could this be? You know, there's some players that are on loan. There's some players that are on the roster, but are not going to dress because they want them gone. There's lots of injuries. There's suspensions. So you had Tyler Miller, who is not fit yet to play. just hanging out on the bench just to get some, you know, I don't know, just get out of the house a little bit, stretch the legs. I don't really know why he's there.
Be back into the team rotation.
Let's just say that. So my expectations were low, and we could talk about the game. I mean, there's not too much in the game to talk about, but you could say that the beginning of the game went as poor as it could go, I think. And you could say they were underwater for about 20 minutes, resulting in a goal. When was that first goal? What was the time on that? It was the 20th minute. So for right about that amount of time, maybe about 25 minutes. And then they figured out a way to tread water for a lot of the game. But you knew that there was no opportunity to change the game from the bench. You knew that they were sort of forced into tactics that they may not have wanted to do because of the personnel that were available and the size of the field. And then it was sort of, I think I tweeted at some point in the game, I was like, if they can figure out a way to steal a goal on a counterattack, on a corner, it will be the funniest and most undeserved result in the universe, because they've just been such a non-threat. But they've also managed to, New York City just were tripping over their own feet enough times. You had people missing. Moncef Bakrar missed probably a 2xG chance. And then went on the bench and cried about it because it was so awful.
Yeah, it was.
They should have 22 shots, 8 of them on goal to DC United's 11 and 1 on goal. Possession, DC United had 50% of it, but possession is the most ridiculous and non-eliminating stat that could have ever existed to tell you how a game went.
Let's start with, you know, and I'm not making any excuses here for the field. Both teams have to play on it, but games, I feel like... We talk about a pressing team, and I feel like we always get into this. We talk about, well, you know, maybe this will suit DC because, you know, it's a short field. They can really institute their press. I almost feel like with the way DC plays their game, the field really doesn't lend itself well to what they try to do. And I think, you know, I think American Soccer Analysis had a really good, they've started to sort of put together, you know, we're 8 games in, we've started to kind of see some things, and they've sort of talked about, you know, how, you know, are you pressing, but are you pressing and also countering really quickly? And DC are very much at like sort of alone at like the topper left end of the echelon, and that they are a pressing team, but they're also not a team that really counters quickly. They're not going to look to counter. What they want to do is sort of establish control, you know, in the defensive half of the field and really control the game to there. They're not a team that's going to, you know, incessantly press, and when they win the ball, they're not going to try to go quickly. They're going to try to sort of basically establish their press inside, you know, inside their opponent's half. This game does not lend well, I think, to what DC tried to do and their weaknesses, which are counterattacking, hitting quick, switching the field. It's not hard to switch when the field is, you know, at the size of my apartment building as far as like width goes. And like, you know, it's very conducive to those types of things. So I think it was a bit of a mismatch. I think, you know, Troy did the best he could with the lineup. I don't really have any qualms with who he sent out there to play.
How could you?
Yeah, maybe Antley makes a little bit more composed. I thought, you know, Matea Kombone had a really rough first half, and
he did. Antley wasn't available though. So as far as what he could offer, you had the bench was, so that we have it right, it was Martin Rodriguez, mm-hmm. Tyler Miller, Luis Zamudio, Jacob Murrell, and Christian Fletcher?
Yeah.
No, didn't he start? Oh, Christian Fletcher.
Yeah, Christian
Fletcher.
That was
it. Mm-hmm. That was it. That's all he could do.
Yeah, and you know, I think also with the width of the field, I don't think the wingbacks really worked as well as they could if the field was a little bit wider and maybe there's a bit more space. Overall, like, you know, throughout the whole game, DC, you know, short of a chance in the first half where I think Benteke, you know, really the first time they actually like hit New York really quickly on the break, got the ball to Jared Stroud, who played a ball over to Benteke, you know, for essentially a wide open Hepper that he really should have done better with, you know, and maybe we're talking about a different result here. You know, the first goal, I think, you know, I may be a little harsher on Matea Kombone over Petula on that, because I think Petula is tracking the player who he's supposed to track. And Akinboni is the right-sided defender in that case, and he needs to kind of look over his shoulder and make sure he's tracking, you know, a wide-open Santi Rodriguez on that. Either way, it's a complete team breakdown. He also had a couple of moments where he just looked beat. Very much deer in the headlights type look. He's young. He'll get better.
He hasn't started since October 7th of last year, so if you're looking for reasons why he may not have looked up for it, that's one of them. But
he was better. I would say second half he looked a little bit more solid. You know, there were less moments that really made you go ooh in that second half.
But I do encourage people to go over and go to our Patreon and read the wrap up post that Ted posted. And while there's an excuse for why he performed the way he did, him, Jackson Hopkins, and Christian Fletcher do have to realize the stakes of the situation right now, and that there's an opportunity right now. There won't always be one. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this team gets to a point next year where they're really trying to win, and then there's not these minutes to give to these players, and there's not the, well, we only have three guys on the bench, so you're going to play. Hopefully that's a thing of the past next year. So they really do need to establish themselves. And Ted Kuti-Pietro needs to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Those are other things that have to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'll be less harsh on Ted Kuti-Pietro, but, you know, I in my article, I sort of talk about the opening game last year against TFC, you know, where Ted Kuti-Pietro, you know, at the time was not, no one was talking about him being like the locked in starter. This was actually, I think I came in this year, I'm like, well, he had a good preseason. Let's see if it translates, but this might be his last year here. Like if nothing clicks for him, he's gone. In a certain respect. So, you know, and then he saw a moment, came off the bench, seized that moment and, you know, really propelled himself last year. And, you know, I think Christian Fletcher, you know, when Christian Fletcher comes off the bench, I didn't really see much. There wasn't really that much of a spark. Yes, he has a goal this year, but he really hasn't been able to really translate it. You know, Jackson Hopkins is still young. You know, I still think we forget he's maybe the one player we kind of forget he's still like, you know,
19.
But you know, at this age, he's been a professional for a long enough time that maybe you would expect to see. Just, I think the biggest thing I'm leaving with a lot of these players is, I don't see anything that gets me excited about them on the field. I can't point to a moment, you know, even Fletcher's goal is just, you know, he's tracking the far-sided winger and the net's wide open and he does a really nice job just to kind of slot it home, but he doesn't do anything on that play that makes you go, that makes you stand on your feet. We'll talk about some of the spirit players that are absolutely doing those things.
Yeah. What is the opposite?
Yeah. And I think that's really like, you know, I want to see some of that, you know, from these guys. They have an opportunity to do so, and they're not fulfilling that opportunity right now. And so maybe it gets better. Maybe they'll read my article and that'll, you know, they'll start to play well. So.
Well, their parents might already be Patreon. So it's really possible.
If our Patreon drops, we'll know why. So,
yeah.
It was a tough game. I don't know, like the New York games are just the where they play at Citi Field is hard to analyze. Really, it's an odd game. You can't approach it like a regular game. You can't approach it with your same tactics. So I think maybe Troy deserves some criticism. I think he should have maybe looked, you know, drill the team a little bit on, hey, we need to play quickly. We can't approach this like a regular game. Maybe he did those things and the team just couldn't get it. Again, the team is also without a lot of really important pieces. So.
He did not take the blame on this one. He was very much like, there was not a commitment from the players on this. There was not a full effort. That was where we fell down. So in the past, he had been like, maybe it's my fault, the fact that we continue to give up goals when we do. And that's about preparation. That's about, you know, mental sharpness. That's my area, and we're not doing it, so we got to work on it. But this game, he was just basically like, they didn't try hard enough. They didn't commit. Even in the player, and he was basically saying the roster size, the injuries, the suspensions are not an excuse for effort, and they're not.
Yeah.
I think he didn't throw anyone on the bus quite clearly, but he was not saying like, you know, point the blame at me, guys. Mm-hmm. I didn't prepare them well enough. So, well, it's something to watch.
Yeah, something to watch. You know, we've talked about, you know, his demeanor with the team and everything, and maybe this was a, you know, I'm going to kind of take the mask off a little bit and say this isn't acceptable. You know, I want to be the nice coach. I want to be the good coach. I want to be the motivator. But, you know, maybe there needs to be some stern talking, and maybe
there's a question for one of our Patreons that I want to drop that's right relevant to that. Dapper Dinosaur, that is his real name, says, I'm curious about what we're going to, not literally, that's his legal name. I'm curious about what we're going to see from Troy when we need to bring the, when he needs to bring the accountability. How does he maintain the chummy atmosphere in the club if he needs to make it clear we need better performances?
I mean, I think you got to look at it from the fact of, you know, at the end of the day, you would hope that a player like Matthias Glick, who's been a professional, a player like Christian Benteke, you know, understands that this isn't good enough and that, you know, they need to also push harder and, you know, they can be the captains on the team and, you know, hey, it's been great. We've been playing well, but, you know, now we need to start getting some results. And, you know, I think we're hopefully in for a little bit of a better display against Seattle, who are having a very rough time of it right now. And it's at home, you know, so, you know, the fans will be back, the crowds will be back, the drums will be back, all of that will be back. So, but I think it's a perfect moment to.
And Seattle's coming in. There's some red cards, so they're going to be missing some players. They lost. Certainly.
Alex Rodon, I know, is one who's out.
Yep. Although I was just about to say, you're catching a team at the right time. We said that about Inter Miami, and we know how that went, too. So maybe this team, they don't do so well with the trap games. To your point, Ted, I think that's right. You can hope that you can lean on the team. Otherwise, he's not going to be camp counselor all the time. Mm-hmm. And you can still have a chummy atmosphere by understanding this is a results-oriented business. You know, I look at that game. I'm thinking back now. It didn't seem to me like a lack of effort, really. Like, I wasn't seeing, like, lackadaisical play, really. I mean, maybe I need to watch it again. That's not what he said it was a matter of effort. I didn't really see that. But, you know, he would know better than I. But
It definitely looked like... To me, it looked like a lot of lack of sort of preparation. I maybe agree with him a little bit on sort of the lack of effort. It just looked like the team maybe, you know, I think it seems to me like maybe, you know, he went in saying, hey, here's how we're going to play. This is going to be a different game. We're going to have to move quickly. We're going to have to move the ball quickly. And the team just kind of got, you know, essentially run over by a team that knew how to play in that situation. So I don't know. It's.
Yeah. Another Patreon question that's relevant. Bear Witness says, do you think Lassane would change anything about his tactics or lineup if he could go back in time? Or was that just the product of having a short bench on a tiny field? I think you made a good point about wingback play. And they switched to a back four at the end of the game, which is also when they gave up the second goal. But that's neither here nor there. They were chasing at that point, trying to get a goal. Other than to maybe say that they needed to play with a little bit more quickness, or they needed to figure out how to sit back and absorb pressure earlier in the game when they were being sort of onslaughted like that and then look to counter. They don't counter quickly, sort of like, as you said before, that's not really what this team's built for. As far as the lineup choices, there were no other ones. This was fine. They did. There was, unless he wanted to have Tyler Miller play left back, this is what the deal was.
Yeah. I mean, really he put out who he could put out and, you know, this is, I think the more interesting part about this is, you know, and I think also back to his lack of effort. I mean, the team was facing similar issues against St. Louis, and they put in an incredible effort in that game to get a point, to get a draw, to almost win that game based on the roster. So, you know, I think that's another aspect to sort of come at and say, yeah, maybe the effort wasn't necessarily there. So, you know, and yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm just thinking back to the fact that Martin Rodriguez is not even a consideration to start.
Yeah.
And how like absolutely foolish we all were in the preseason. Like, all right, he's healthy. I'm sure he's probably going to start. Like he would, you would assume he would start based on his, you know, the roster as it exists, his salary, the fact you have him for one more year. And it's like, no, yeah. Absolutely not. Not even with three guys on the bench.
I mean, at least he's making the roster. I mean, Mohamed Yaz, I think that to me was maybe the more surprising part, that he wasn't even like on the roster.
The question, I want to make sure we get the question for that on there. At RJ Olson's, one of many questions from RJ, says, what do you think it says that Mohamed Yaz didn't make a bench that only had five players, two of which were goalies?
I hope it means that there's either a move imminent or they're looking to exercise that contract buyout. I hope that's what that means, because otherwise it doesn't make sense to not at least have him out there. They had no defenders out there. None. Zero.
I think if they were going to exercise the buyout, they should have made him come and just ran wind sprints after the game for like 2 hours. Like, just get your money's worth.
I mean, that's the only thought to me. I mean, the trade deadline is, you know, Goff is reporting they're looking to trade/transfer him. My guess is, I think their transfer window with interested teams, I think, closed out, earlier this year. Maybe they're looking for like a trade where they, you know, have to keep some of his salary on the books, but they free up the roster spot. I don't know.
He's going to go hang out on Ravel Morrison's Island.
Yeah.
Like riding around in their DC United furnished Sea-Doos.
Like, I'm curious who would be a team that would like trade for him. I want us to dump somebody who's like really bad. Normally like Colorado would be the team, but
Colorado was the one that on my mind when you said that too.
Yeah.
That was also what I was
might be Chicago. That. Chicago are a trash fire right now as well.
They are too. More questions at Brandon Zebron says, this is from Twitter. How much weight do you put in the New York City FC game? Depleted roster and below average field size, didn't line up well for DC United from the start. I think we kind of said that.
Mm-hmm.
We said that people are generally feeling not too depressed by that loss. I think the game Orlando was much more of a kick in the gut than this one was because mm-hmm. of expectations and the fact that we were home and the fact that we had a lead.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that we played well in that game. Like, this is right. the first game against, and there were certainly stretches of that Orlando game where they didn't play well. You know, I think they got a little bit overrun, but I mean, they were higher XG. This was the first game where I can legitimately say DC was second best. Maybe the Cincy game being the other one, but like, this was the first game where really this team just felt like second best in nearly every category. So I think the Seattle game, if that one ends in a loss or even a draw, I think then maybe we start to say, okay, now it's starting to get a little concerning. Results aren't the only thing. This is about building a culture, changing things. But it's that would be a very tough pill to swallow if they can't get 3 points against Seattle.
Another question from RJ says, with the status of Knauss up in the air, do you think United makes any last minute moves prior to the close of the transfer window tomorrow? I think no. I think this is the team.
Yeah, this is the team till the summer until they can figure out some other moves, get out of some contracts. It seems like Tom Bogart's reporting that there is some trade market, there's some trade market maneuvering. There might be some last minute moves. He has Seattle Sounders defender Xavier Arriaga as one, that could be on the move. I think that's maybe one to keep track for DC. Also center back Dave Romney as well. Another
out of favor in New England.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, center back depth for this team with, I think that could be something to look at, but I think that I would be shocked if this team makes any move other than, Yaz going away, basically. He would be the only
and spot. That doesn't have to be by tomorrow. That could be whenever.
Yeah. So
Brendan Cartwright says on Twitter, if Jeremy Gray is not getting recalled for the New York City FC game with only 3 outfield players on their bench, safe to say he's not going to get time with DC. Because remember, Hayden Sarr just got recalled in a similar situation. Do you remember the other DC United homegrown that's never played a minute in an MLS game for the club? I know the answer. Do you know the answer?
You posted it on the
Twitter. I didn't know if you read it.
I did read it.
Okay, it's Antonio Bustamante. That's yes. Who it is. Yeah, I think that's probably safe to say.
Yeah, and that's a real shame.
We clearly didn't care about how Las Vegas' feelings about the last time. We're like, tough luck. We needed this guy to stand on the bench for an hour.
Yeah, I think after that moment, they were like, look, I think they maybe said, look, if you're talking about an emergency, will you actually think you might play him? Then yes. But otherwise, let's just leave him there. I think it speaks a lot. I think it speaks, unfortunately, about Jeremy Gray. I think this is Jeremy Gray. Jeremy Gray's done. I think this is yep. his last year for the team.
This question we've answered in a fashion before, but I don't know. Wames, WHAMES on Discord says, with the midseason rule changes MLS is teeing up that include the provision to waive and forgive 2 contracts from the cap, who would you want DC United to strategically shed, even if they're producing well? And what holes should Alley fill with that newfound cap flexibility? Not to worry about if they're producing well. I think we have decided who the 2 players are that we would get rid of.
Is Mohamed Yaz and Martin Rodriguez. Those are the 2.
From a perspective of the hit on the cap and what they're doing, they're the quite obvious ones.
Yeah.
And what hole should Alley fill with that newfound cap flexibility? I think we talked about that too a little bit. I think we need a bunch of things. We need center back depth. We need a left back. We need a starting left back. We need a creative midfielder. and we need a winger.
Yeah.
All things that we are sort of replacing by those players and also the natural holes that exist.
And
I also think that maybe a backup forward, I don't think Jacob Murrell's ready.
Yeah.
I think that was a bit of a, not necessarily a reach, but we were paying him money with the assumption that he could leave college early and contribute right away. And I don't really see that. So maybe another backup forward.
Another guy that, you know, I kind of wish get more depth in and then maybe look, you know, hopefully this team, the MLS Next Pro team, but he would be a guy I would absolutely want to have on that MLS Next Pro roster.
Another great question from our listener says, how much, another RJ Olsen question, how much do you think DC United is hurt by not having a Next Pro team? They need to get Fletcher and Akinboni more minutes. I think tremendously so. I think if they had one of those teams, you would never have a situation like we had in New York City because you'd have an emergency loan from those players up there and you'd have bodies and you wouldn't be in a what do we do situation. But yeah, these players are not going to grow. Jackson Hopkins, before this resurgence of being in the game, being featured all the time due to injuries and lack of depth, was at risk of turning into one of those players, a Griffin Yao, a player who could not get minutes. Griffin Yao was a bit more of a particular case because he proved that whenever he played for Loudon, he showed out and it was just too bad. He was too good for USL championship, but was not ready to contribute at the MLS level for whatever reason. And now he's in Belgium and now there's a rumor he's going to come back to MLS.
Three teams interested. Hopefully we're one of them. I would like us to be one of them.
It would be funny if after the interview he gave to American Soccer Now or whoever it was, where he was like, DC United didn't value me at all. And I'm happy I'm gone, basically. Or whoever he was talking to, that was the basic premise. Granted, new regime, and his family's from here, but, you know, who knows? That'd be great. I'd put him in, he'd start over Stroud for me.
Yeah, he would. I mean, get him, yeah, it would be incredible to have him in. He would occupy one of those U22 slots. I think if there's a chance, he would do it. He also doesn't take an international slot, so that's another big plus for him.
This is the Chris Durkin move. We just have a ceremonial return home. Come home from college and intern and back at your old job for a semester.
And they get traded to St. Louis.
Yep, that's right.
But, you know, I think that's interesting. I think his type of move, I think you're going to start seeing that happen with a lot more players with the U22 slots, where maybe they look at it as a, you know, you move a player to Europe. You know, you move a player to Europe at, you know, 16, 17, 18, where, you know, it's clear they're not going to get minutes in MLS. It's clear they're better than Next Pro or USL Championship or where they're there. But this is an opportunity maybe them to get a step up. Because, I mean, the Belgian league, other than Anderlecht, it's not the highest quality league. Like, it's Europe and people, like, I know Europe comes with, like, its own little prestige. But the Belgian league is not the highest quality. I think there are some MLS teams that would actually run the table with some of those Belgian guys. And I think it's, you know, but he moves up there. He plays well. He's getting minutes. He's getting appearances. He's showing well for the U.S., you know, Olympic team as well. So I think it's worth it to then you bring him back. You can sign him to that U22 deal and he can, you know, essentially grow and maybe then make a bigger move outside of Europe. So we'll see what happens with that. That's one to track.
And 35% sell on fee there on Griffin Yao. So if he doesn't show up here, there's money in the bank. We'll take it.
Yeah. So I mean, that's going to be funny if he comes, we pay ourselves like
the best kind of transfer fee, I guess.
Would you prefer him go for, like, let's say $4 million to back to MLS, but we get, you know, 35% of that? Or would you rather him come here to DC?
Come here. I don't think we do better with $1 million. We're not constrained as much by money as we are by the salary cap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I assume, granted, I did not fall off the turnip truck yesterday. I am not assuming Jason Levien is writing checks, throwing money all over the place. I'm an alive human. I've been in this area. But this particular problem right now is about the salary cap.
Yeah, it is.
That's the situation we are in currently. You could buy yourself out of that now, and then that becomes about money once again. So we'll see. We'll withhold judgment to see if that happens or not. But yeah, I'd rather have the player.
Yeah. And we'll see what this team does with I think Martin Rodriguez will be here till the end of the year. I think they might use the contract buyout on Yaz if they can't find anything else. I think they're going to be desperate to find something else. You know, even if it's a mutual contract termination and he goes for free, I think that could be an option as well. So I think we'll see. I'm not expecting anything immediately right now with him. My expectation is that we might see something in the summer window, but I might be wrong. Who knows? Who knows? All right. Should we shift? Do you have any more questions? Or
that's it. That's all the DC United ones. We've got a bunch of Spirit ones.
We got a bunch of Spirit ones. All right, let's jump into it. Washington Spirit. Let's talk about more fun things. Washington Spirit 2-0 victors over Gotham, which at beginning of the year, if you had told me that, I would have said, I don't believe you. There is absolutely no way this stacked winners of the offseason Gotham team is going to lose to the Spirit. But
Remember, go back in time, listen to the Andy Sullivan interview where we're talking about, like, is it bad for the sport that that Gotham is like going to be the super team? And Andy was like, we do not care.
Yeah,
we do not care. And for good reason.
They did not care. This game. The Spirit have been by far the most of the soccer teams in the area. Loudoun United. I'm mad at you though. The Spirit have been probably the most impressive and the most fun team to watch this year in this area. And if you're not watching them, you are really missing out. They look so good. this was impressive to me. There's still incredible amounts of talent there. Yes, they're still a little hurt. But New York Gotham never looked in this game. They never looked like they were going to score. It was all Spirit. You know, Hal Hirschfeld playing incredible balls. And really the Spirit, I thought, adopted. They played a little more direct maybe than we're used to. But they just found a move where it was like, just play Trinity Rodman over the top. Find Trinity Rodman over the top and she'll run into the defense. And she should have had a goal and didn't.
She should have had two.
Yeah.
I think. And not even just play her over the top. They adjusted and saw that the left side of the defense was very vulnerable for Gotham, and they overloaded them. They switched Rodman, they put her on that side. The team has been built from the beginning of this season by Adrian Gonzalez and obviously the head coach in absentia, Jonathan Giraldez, as being a team that needs to troubleshoot on the field, to see the gaps, to see the vulnerabilities, to have options available to them when they come in, and then make the decision on the field and attack. And that is what they're starting to do. That is what you're starting to see. They're analyzing the vulnerabilities. It's not a matter of, we prepared before, you know, in the run up, we knew what we were going to do. We did it the whole time. That is not the way they play. They're going to be a team that constantly makes adjustments. And to your point, they played direct. And then they looked at where they needed to attack on the Gotham side. They went down the left side, and they had a lot of joy the whole time. If you look at the XG map for the game, Spirit had 2.03, and New York had 0.70. I think that's charitable. There was a nice save once again by Kingsbury, where I believe she blocked the ball with her face. And then there were not great opportunities generated. They just weren't. They were really managing to. Lots of shots from outside the 18. Three of the shots that were on goal two of them were outside the 18. And then one was the save from right outside. Kingsbury's had back-to-back weeks where she's had opportunities on the doorstep that she's smothered. That's her Spider-Man skills coming to play once again. But it was because the Spirit were a bit wasteful with their opportunities as well. There was a time at which a goal could have come up from nothing. And change the course of the game. And thankfully it didn't, but it certainly could have happened.
Yeah. And, you know, and I feel almost bad. I feel like Trinity Rodman, I think she had a couple moments on both her opportunities, on a few of her opportunities where she could have scored, or maybe there was an option. There was a SAR, or there was another player to her right. But she's like, she really wants to get a goal. But I mean, again, she just continues. I mean, it's impressive to me how she has zero goals in the year, and yet she still looks like far and away the best player. And it was the same thing. It was the same thing in this game, where it was just like she would get the ball in good spots. She would move. She would set up opportunities. I also thought SAR is starting to maybe turn a corner a little bit. She looks a little more goal. She's getting better opportunities in front of goal. Her movement looks a little bit better. So maybe, you know, maybe whatever the coaches are seeing, maybe we're going to start to see it a little bit better. I think she's, the past two games, I thought she's been much improved over what she has been. So
she has. I think that her attributes today or during that game were much more about her ability to press and create turnovers and facilitate rather than be the target nine that she's positionally set up to be. But it is an improvement. I think she was wasteful. I think she missed two big chances, according to the stats. So, you know, now again, it's you want to see something different from that nine, and you probably will. I think when all the pieces that are in play are in play, Ashley Hatch scored her first goal of the season, from the penalty spot in this game too. So when you talk about Trinity not getting off the mark, this team is being pulled from a production standpoint by its rookies.
Yeah,
which is not what you would have expected. That is, Mark Kerkorian is doing like the moonwalk in his office and like giving us the double bird, a la Amber Brooks and us and all the rest of the fans.
Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, you there was, I'm looking to the stats. If you look at the overall stats, you had 29 clearances by the Spirit to Gotham's 8. The Spirit had, like I said before, had many more shots. The narrative was the Spirit haven't played anybody yet. So that's why they have 1-3 in a row. They played a bunch of nobodies. They played one game out in Seattle. They look like they didn't know how to play soccer, and maybe that's the real team. Gotham does have 10 people on the injury reserve. That's not the Spirit's fault. They didn't do that. Tierney Davidson added to that and maybe became the 10th during the game with a hamstring. But they're still a good team. They're still really good players on that roster. They're still dangerous, and the Spirit just dominated them.
Yeah, I
mean, just the whole game.
I mean, they still have Esther Gonzalez, yep. You know, from the World Cup winning Spain team. They still have Lynn Williams was out there. Emily Sonnet,
Crystal Dunn subbed on.
Yeah, Crystal Dunn subbed on. You know, so I mean, there's still maybe not the full strength. You know, New York side, no, but it certainly was. It certainly was a squad that is still very talented, and I think the Spirit just completely outplayed them. You know, and I waxed so much poetics about Croy Bethune in this game, and she has probably the best goal of the week, I would say. Just well taken shot from.
There's some good ones this week, but it's certainly up there. I don't know if she'll win the goal of the week. Unfortunately, there's a free kick out in California that might take it, but.
Yeah, just a really nicely well-taken goal. It's kind of funny with the amount of chances they had that were probably higher percentage chances, and then she just whips that one out. So
did they have that one calculated, what that chance was?
I tried to look for a shot. It's not up on FootMob, unfortunately. I tried to look.
It has to be very, very low. She received the ball outside the 18, finds a spot between a midfielder and defender, dribbles to the side, creates some space. And then tucks the ball into the near post. It was moving a little funky. She knuckleballed it a little bit, and it sneaks in. It had to be very low percentage chance, and she converts, and she wins the penalty. Once again, that was the much shorter version of the VAR review. did not take 15 minutes this time. But they saw the opportunity. Once again, I forget who handled it, but. Might have been Dabinia.
Yeah,
I don't know.
By the way, sorry, just to interrupt. So FB Ref has her total XG as 0.2 for this game. So this was not even her highest XG goal game. So somewhere
bananas.
Somewhere in the low percentage chance.
Sorry, I meant Bruninha, by the way, not Dabinia, who I believe still plays for North Carolina.
Yeah, but still, still. By the way, just want to say with Bethune, 4 shot creating actions. 2 goal creating actions. So still, you know, racking up those numbers. And she again looks, she looks incredibly good. You know, passing accuracy is not great, but she certainly, I think it's like 56%, but I don't have the progressive passes or where she plays her sort of passes into the final third. I bet I can look for that if I look a little harder. But still just, I think just another sort of incredible performance from her. And I think she's sort of starting to get some of that national team buzz as well.
Yep. The United Spirits can never rest. We just keep figuring ways to lose players during breaks. Kate Wiesner gets on the field for the first time since she was injured in, I believe, Seattle. And Chloe Ricketts gets on for her second time once again in stoppage time to log an official appearance. We have a lot of questions, so I want to make sure I get through them.
Yeah, let's get them.
We can sort of talk more about the game through those questions. Rose Room Collective says, how can this team make the leap from being good to being dominant? What pieces do we need to add, and who would you target during the summer? We've talked a little bit about, you know, Lacey Santos is going to be a big part of where we're short, right? I still think Hatch plays best as a nine and not have to like work as hard as she does on the wing or have to fade in and out throughout the game. Although that appears to be a trademark of the style of this coach, having players that have that positional flexibility that they don't need to be in one spot. I think this team could use another center back to start potentially. I think that would be smart. They're an injury away from having a real big problem. they're strong in a lot of other places. The midfield is become very deep. Paige Mateer, who was an every game starter, is now relegated to being a 15 minute a game player because Hal Hirschfeld has taken that job with two hands and isn't giving it up.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's lots of moves. We just talked about DC United for 30 minutes. There's a lot of pieces that need to be, I think we said five positions that needed to backfill. I don't think the Spirit have that problem necessarily.
I think some center back competition, I think would be healthy for them. But like you said, I mean, I think we all kind of went into this year with the Spirit thinking like they would need more help because we weren't sure about the draft picks. And now you've had two draft picks that have come in and are both competing for Rookie of the Year at this point, early on in the season, in Hal Hirschfeld and Corey Bethune. So, you know, that's what happens. Things can change quickly once you suddenly, you know, once they become starters, then you start to develop depth. Like, you know, Brittany Ratcliffe, I think we thought, well, maybe, you know, is Brittany Ratcliffe going to be like a week in and week out starter here? Like, are the college kids going to need time to adjust? And just hasn't been like that. They've just stepped in, and now Ratcliffe is depth, and that's sort of what you wanted.
The best case situation to have that. I think I said it before. It's like when DC United signed Pedro Santos to be a rotational player, and then they're like, whoops. He's going to play all the time. This is like the inverse of that. This is what they actually want.
This is what we want. This would be like Jacob Murrell stepping in and actually like playing out on the left side, and then we don't have to rely on Dahomey. So
right. RJ Olson has a Spirit question saying, for you, what is the most surprising thing about the Spirit this season? It's quite obvious what the most surprising thing is. It is the performance of the rookies. Mm-hmm. It's quite obviously that this was a gamble where if this didn't work out, you can look at the roster and be like, uh-oh. I mean, Paige Mateer probably could have done most of what Hal Hirschfeld did, but getting rid of Ashley Sanchez and only having Corey Bethune as your option was a gamble.
Yeah.
She's a thrice ACL recovered college player who had shown talent in the college game, but it does not necessarily translate directly each time. By the way, Corey will be on the show this week, so get your questions in for her. But it worked out. It worked out better than I could have possibly imagined. And the great thing about her, and I think there's like a false modesty that a lot of players will give you coming out of college. They're like, oh, you know, I'm just happy to be here and, you know, take my chances as they come. And, you know, I had to adjust to the speed of the league and the talent. Everyone's so talented. And she's just saying like, if there's a chance, I'm going to take it. Like I'm going to convert my opportunities. What's your game like? I have sauce, I have vision, and I'm gonna score some goals and assist the ball. Coming up, right? That like week one. That was what she was saying about her play. I love it.
Yeah,
it's very fresh. It's very refreshing. Rather,
can we get her to give some motivational speeches to Christian Fletcher and to Jackson Hopkins?
yeah.
But you know, I guess along that, I have been surprised at how quickly the team. And not just, I mean, they're being carried production wise by the, by the young kids. I think they're getting the glory right now. But you know, just how quickly Trendy Rodman has adjusted, and really just she's become such a much better player since this change in style. She looks so much different. I felt like, you know, I almost feel like before it was almost like I thought she was really good, and then I'm like. And now I look now and I'm like, wow, other coaches have really been holding her back because she can be so, so much better than what we've seen. And I think we've seen her from this first couple of games. You know, I think she hasn't gotten any sort of persist, but I still consider her like the best player out there. And it showed when the team, I think the team will fare better if, you know, when she does go away. I think they've certainly developed that, but you know, so.
The question from Lotus takes it the other direction saying, the Spirit have been very reliant on Rodman for advancing the ball into the opponent's attacking third during this weekend's match. Are the Spirit overly reliant on Rodman for progressing the ball or appropriately so given how effective she is? If the Spirit need one or more alternatives to the Rodman solution, what options should they prioritize for development? I think they just signed one of them. I think Lacey Santos is going to be another ball-carrying creative player that may be able to do that. But that aside, that has not been Croy's role. Croy has been sort of the recipient of the chance creation with the ball already in the attacking third, basically. That's really where she shines. I think there is, I don't want to say over-reliance, but there's clearly been a reliance. Every game, that I have been in the post game for at home games that we basically said, like, there was a tactical adjustment for Trinity, and then we fed her the ball. We found, we probed where the weak spot was in the defense, and that's where we sent Trinity. So I think it's foolish to not use your best weapon, and they're not making that mistake. But I do think I would be curious to see. We have an N of one this season where Trinity didn't play, and it was the game that they looked completely inept. So there will come another time. There will come many times over the course of the season where they've got to figure that out. And I think we'll know once we get there. The idea is that they're building in the free-flowing tactical flexibility so that you can do that. I don't think they're there yet all the way, mm-hmm. but I think a time will come. We'll find that out. But I think Lacy Santos will help.
You know, I still think they still have Andy Sullivan, who's still really good at sort of taking the ball out from the midfield. You know, I think Hal Hirschfeld has shown an ability. She played probably the best, like, line breaking pass of the night. She got the ball, I think, in like the half and just played this, you know, absolutely beautiful ball to set up a chance. So there's players out there that I think can, you know, progress and move the ball, you know, through passing, through dribbling, out there on this team. And it's fun to watch, guys. Again, if you're not involved, you're missing out. This is going to be a fun team. And, you know, I think with how quickly they're picking it up and how they still have work to do, this is a team that it finally feels like there is a little bit of a, I don't want to say dynasty, but there's a little bit of a thought that this team could become dominant pretty quickly, with how they've looked so far.
And, you know, you got a window coming up. Michelle Kang just sold her company, her mm-hmm. privately held company, to Accenture for a lot of money. So, you know, maybe she wants to have some, you know, some fun money with her newfound windfall. Who knows? We've got two questions that are sort of the same. I also saw this on Reddit, on the Washington Spirit subreddit, which is very rarely used. So that I saw this here, that was interesting. This is from Bahamadou on Twitter. Says, if the Spirit continues to perform well with Gonzalez's head coach, how difficult will it be for the players to adjust to the new setup of Iraldez as head coach and Gonzalez as his assistant? And I think the answer to that is they've been in pretty close communication the whole time. This has sort of been a joint venture. I don't think it'll be too much of a difficulty because the system is the same. But then the question was asked, could the Spirit be in need of an assistant with Gonzalez maybe finding some head coaching opportunities if current results continue? I think that could be a problem for next year. Yeah. He's certainly done well. I think no one could begrudge him. I think they're paying him a good salary mm-hmm. to come over here and do this. So I think that's part of it. I think they knew the situation they were in. The rumors were that Michelle Kang tried to pay a large release fee to get Iraldez out of Barcelona sooner, and he refused. And then there was a question of like, all right, well, we need to make a move here. And then we signed Gonzalez, who was already a head coach in La Liga. And he said it was like, it's an opportunity that I cannot turn down and I have to go right now. So clearly, I think there was a bunch of commas in that offer, or more than he thought. And he's like, all right, I'm going to go do this.
Yeah. And he's earning it. And I think eventually, you know, there with how aggressive this league is looking, you know, I'm sure there are other coaches, there are other teams around the league that are maybe paying attention that aren't happy. A team like Portland, who just, you know, moved their coach to the front office and is trying to figure out what they want to do.
Mark Parsons is sitting with athletic writers in stands talking about games that he's watching. So I think his agent will likely be calling Portland too to say, hey, remember me? We did pretty good when I was there. Remember me?
Although how do you have to feel? Yes, there are different players out there, but I mean, it's a lot of the same lineup mm-hmm. and the team looks so much better than they, I mean, really under Mark Parsons, this team never looked this good. And sorry, Mark, but it's
tactics were not a good fit, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of, that's not impossible.
Yeah, certainly. Any other questions?
That's all the questions.
Let's get to, we got some small little news about the NWSL, the Liga MX Summer Cup, whatever mm-hmm. they're calling it. Washington Spirit are going to have two matches. I think they're going to play two matches in, I believe it's in Philly, one against Chivas. And then they are going to down to City Stadium in Richmond, which is interesting. I'm curious. I wasn't aware. I kind of had in my head this was like a League's Cup type of thing. I wasn't aware this is going to be like sort of a summer like tournament tour with Liga MX. So that's that part's interesting to me. I don't know if that is like, is it an effort to try to boost like expansion interest maybe, or
that would make the most sense, right?
Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense if you're looking at a small league still, but I would say almost every single city you're looking at, you could look at some market. Houston looks a little soft, but let's just run down the markets, right? If you look at the fan base interest, San Diego, huge. LA, huge. Seattle, huge. Louisville, a little bit less than maybe they want, but still, I think pretty good. Kansas City, amazing. Gotham.
Louisville's like the Columbus. Louisville's the Green Bay. It's the small market. Right. It's a small market, but you can get a pretty dedicated fan base out of that market. So
Gotham, I think, is cooking the right direction. Boston's coming in the league soon. We'll see there. Orlando. Go ahead.
Not to besmirch Gotham, but how much do you think they're looking forward to that new stadium in Queens? They're going to jump ship, and it's not going to be quick.
Yep. And then Orlando may be a little bit soft on their fan base, but I think that if you look at where we need to grow as a league, so let's find out where there's an unmet need. I don't know what to say about about Salt Lake. I'm not sure what the situation is there. Bay FC, still a new franchise, playing in San Jose. I believe they sold out the first game.
Mm-hmm. So thanks.
Did I miss any? Portland.
I mean, you didn't talk really. I don't think you mentioned DC, but I mean, I think DC is certainly growing as a market. They had 15,000 at their game. So, I mean, that's pretty close to DC level numbers as far as like attendance goes.
Richmond's weird because they're not going to put a pro team in Richmond, like an NWSL team in Richmond. That's not going to happen. 0%. They're going to try this Super League. They'll try that, see how that goes.
W League,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, pre-professional.
So Philly makes sense. Philly's a good explorational option. Obviously said Boston's already going to happen. Sacramento, Bay FC is kind of probably going to obviate the need for that.
I think it's also a little bit of market expansion. I think for DC, it's like, we want to go into the Richmond market. It's a great soccer market. You want to try to build fans out of that market. They're doing sort of the opposite of what DC used to do when they used to play games down in Richmond against the Kickers and stuff like that. So
I think Atlanta and Austin are two cities that Atlanta, Austin, and Cincinnati are all three cities that make a lot of sense. I'm always curious if their desire is to fill soccer needs in cities that aren't being addressed at all by men or women, and seeing like if we're the only game in town, how will we do? But I think it's also easy to tap into a rabid fan base that has like excess soccer needs. And I think that Atlanta, Austin would be those things they've been asking for women's team. Cincinnati would be another one of those too. There's a lot of, I keep thinking about Rose Lavelle, and I know that there are other sort of Midwest Bailey Feist would jump at a chance to get back. Who, by the way, scored this week? Congrats to Bailey Feist.
Minnesota, I think, would be a good market as well.
Minnesota would be good too. Yeah,
yeah. I'd like to see them maybe try some markets that are like outside of the like MLS. You know, we talk about them as easy markets because they have successful MLS teams that have
stadiums,
rabid fan base, and stadiums that are already there. I'd like to see maybe some other markets that aren't known for. Are known, maybe they have teams. And of course, we got the Super League coming up as well. So the
what about Canada too?
Yeah, that might be something to watch.
That would make sense, right? I feel like that would really kind of make sense. I mean, I guess
there's talk about a Canadian professional league, I believe. I'm not sure what stage it's at, but there is talk about that starting to develop. So
follow the MLS thing. Let them do that. See what the appetite is, and then come in and put a team in their biggest city. That's the MLS
move. Yeah. All right, folks, I think that's going to do it for this edition of RFQ Refugees Podcast. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Hopefully we'll have a better weekend from the DC perspective, and hopefully a continuation of
Friday night
of good things.
Friday night, Audi Field against Orlando Pride. Come check that out. I think it's Star Wars night or superhero night.
Yeah.
so that's why you should do it. Also, because it's Friday night. That's always a fun. I don't wonder, that must mean your Amazon Prime game, man, if it's Friday night.
Yep, it is.
Probably so.
Yep, it is. All right. We'll touch you guys on next Friday. Look out for next Monday. Ooh, Friday. Next Monday, And also check out also our patreon.com/RVRefugees. We got a ton of content up. Check out my post-game blitz. Feel free to flame me if you think I'm being too harsh on some of the DC players. We'll have player previews. We'll have an interview with Corey Bethune coming up. So definitely worth it to get involved with that. Remember, if you just join at any level, you get early access to all of the, to get access to the previews, you get access to the match previews, you get early access to the post-game blitzes. So we're going to keep those as early release. And of course, also, if you're at the $5 level, you get the special Patreon feed for the podcasts, as well as the
extra shows
like the interviews with Corey Bethune and stuff like that. So definitely check it out. It's worth jumping on. We appreciate you guys. Again, we will catch you guys next Monday. Vamos.
Vamos.
Thank you for listening to RFK Refugees Podcast. Make sure you rate and review the show wherever you download podcasts. If you want to support the show, consider joining our Patreon or subscribing to our channel on Twitch. Lastly, make sure you're following us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, YouTube, Twitch, Goals.tv, Friendster, MySpace, and Tumblr. Some of those are even real. Vamos.